when we created them. Albert Einstein. All the technical information was stolen from reliable sources, and I am happy to stand behind it. Edward Abbey. We in the West have been immersed in a particular mode of cognition the past 100 years, a mode defined by its linearity, its tendency to reductionism, and its insistence on the mechanical nature of nature. This mode of cognition, the verbal, intellectual, analytical, is now the dominant one in Western culture. But it is becoming increasingly obvious that there are inherent problems with this mode of cognition, and the assumptions about nature that it possesses. As William James put it in The Will to Believe, "Round about the accredited and orderly facts of every science, there ever floats a sort of dust cloud of exceptional observations, of occurrences minute and irregular and seldom met with, which it always proves more easy to ignore than to attend to. The ideal of every science is that of a closed and completed system of truth, and phenomena unclassifiable within the system are paradoxical absurdities and must be held untrue." In our time, this dust cloud of exceptional observations has become a whirlwind of powerful proportions. The primary mode of cognition that the practitioners of science have used during the past century, analytical, linear, reductionist, determinist, mechanical, has begun to reach the limits of its assumptions. For the particular mode of cognition used by scientists, and the system to which that mode has given rise, can only maintain coherence by leaving out or ignoring a great many events that did and do not fit within the neat system it created. The wild oscillations that are now occurring in nature, from global warming to uncontrollable forest fires, are an aspect of the consequence of that ignoring. We have begun to reap the whirlwind. There is, however, another mode of cognition, one our species has used as our primary mode during the majority of our time on this planet. This can be termed the holistic, intuitive, depth mode of cognition. Its expression can be seen in how ancient and indigenous peoples gathered their knowledge about the world in which they lived, for example, and in how they gathered knowledge of the uses of plants as medicines. All ancient and indigenous peoples said that they learned the uses of plants as medicines from the plants themselves. They insisted that they did not rely on the analytical capacities of the brain for this, nor use the technique of trial and error. Instead, they said it was from the heart of the world, from the plants themselves, that this knowledge came. For, they insisted, the plants can speak to human beings if only human beings will listen and respond to them in the proper state of mind. Although these assertions have been disregarded by Western thinkers the past 200 years, deemed the superstitious ramblings of unsophisticated, unchristian, and unscientific peoples, it is distinctly odd that every indigenous and ancient culture on Earth, cultures geographically and temporally distinct, would say the same thing. Surely all the people who ever lived cannot be so similarly foolish as to have projected exactly the same kind of wishful or superstitious thinking onto the world. Surely the people who have lived during the past 200 years, and especially the past century, cannot have suddenly become so wise and intelligent that only they can understand the true nature of reality. All the billions of people who lived before them cannot have been so profoundly wrong. There is tremendous hubris and dangerous environmental perturbations in disregarding the wisdom of the ancestors who have gone before us, people who said that they learned about the world not from the ability of their minds to work as analytical organic computers, but from their hearts, as organs of perception. This more ancient mode of cognition has not disappeared.